Welcome to this special one-hour edition of Clear Path, your roadmap to health and wealth brought to you by the Transamerica Institute. I'm your host, Greg Tucker. Well, it's great to have this opportunity to spend some extended time with you today to delve into the issues that we cover on a regular basis each week here on Clear Path, issues about your health or your well-being, as well as the retirement and long-term financial security issues that are important to us all. The Transamerica Institute, of course, is a nonprofit private foundation dedicated to identifying, researching, and of course, educating the public about those critical issues of retirement, health coverage, and all the other relevant financial issues facing Americans today. And really the aim is to empower people to make informed decisions, but the right decisions about what they need to do to ensure their health and well-being and indeed their financial security long term. We'll be right back with this special edition of Clear Path. Welcome back to this very special edition of Clear Path, your roadmap to health and wealth brought to you by the Transamerica Institute. I'm Greg Tucker, your host. Well, in this special edition, we're going to cover the generation known, of course, as the baby boomer generation and what they're doing, what they need to be doing and thinking about as they prepare to enter retirement. Some 10,000 baby boomers are turning 65 every single day in the United States. And with this milestone birthday, they face some of the most important financial decisions of their lives as they begin to transition into retirement. So again, here with us in the studio is Catherine Collinson of the Transamerica Center for Retirement Studies and Hector De La Torre, who leads the Transamerica Center for Health Studies, all part of the Transamerica Institute. Sounds like a lot to explain, but that's what it is. And they're here and we're all together to break open these issues and to discuss them in much greater depth than we typically do on our Monday afternoon show. Well, welcome, Catherine and Hector. It's great to be in the studio all together.
Thanks, Greg. It's fantastic to be here. This is such a big and important topic affecting so many Americans, and it's really surprising in our research that we find very few baby boomers have a great deal of knowledge about their future Social Security and Medicare benefits. So I am really pleased that we're having this conversation today.
And on the healthcare side, this is such an important discussion to have because research shows that a 65-year-old couple on average will need about $240,000 for future medical costs, not including long-term care. So it is such a significant amount of money that folks will have to pay out. And the decision of whether or not or how to engage Medicare is vital in those golden years.
Right. Well, that's just it. I mean, if you're at that golden age, but increasingly we're learning that baby boomers are disrupting traditional notions of retirement. In fact, not ending work altogether and then entering retirement, but transitioning more into retirement and continuing to work, for instance, or working part-time. And there's so much to figure out. And then, of course, you've got to think about Social Security, as you point out, Hector, Medicare, when to sign up, what happens if you don't sign up in time, and then what to do with your accumulated assets, assuming that you've put money away for retirement. How do you transition that into an income stream for an increasingly longer retirement? Catherine, I think your research has indicated people can expect to live another 25, 30 years, perhaps.
Easily. And you made a really good point about baby boomers continuing to work in retirement. This is not our parents' or grandparents' generation where people stopped working immediately. Most baby boomers envision a phased transition that involves working maybe part-time, and that affects the timing and how and when they claim their Medicare and Social Security benefits.
In a little while, we'll have two of our special guests here in the studio that will help us delve into those particular issues even more. But that's really a critical issue, of course, the Social Security and what that can mean if you defer or don't take Social Security at 62 when you're eligible, but push that out to 65, 67, or even 70 years old. It can mean a lot.
And it's very important also on the healthcare side to note that Medicare does not have early enrollment. You can only enroll as of your 65th birthday. There's a window of time, 7 months before, during, and after your 65th birthday, but there is no open enrollment for Medicare.
Figuring out what you need to do and when, and then, of course, remembering to do it is a big part of the equation, if not the whole equation here. We'll discuss even further with our guests, but what are the key dates folks need to keep in mind as they approach this period in their lives?
Well, retirement planning requires some very careful synchronization with some key dates on your calendar and some special birthdays. One is age 59 and a half, and that is the age at which people can take in-service withdrawals from a 401k or similar plan. They'll pay taxes if it's tax-deferred savings, but that's the age at which you can do that without paying the 10% penalty. Age 62 is the earliest age that people claim Social Security retirement benefits, however, at a reduced benefit. Then age 65 is the age that people can claim Medicare. Age 66 is the age that people who are retiring today can claim their full Social Security benefits. Age 70 is the maximum age that people can claim Social Security benefits. And then age 70 and a half is the age at which the IRS requires that people take a minimum required distribution out of their 401k, IRA, or tax-deferred savings.
Now, how good is the government in sending out all those notices to everybody? Does it happen that way? Or what, assuming that you're 58 and or 59 and you're just approaching this period, you can expect to get some notifications, I guess.
You can expect to get some notifications, but we all receive a lot of mail. Some are going to be flagged more closely than others, and it's very easy for those dates to fly by. So, especially as it relates to Social Security and Medicare, it's vitally important to be on the lookout for any letters and notices. And if you haven't seen them, be proactive and try to track them down.
On the Medicare side, you will receive something in the early months of your 64th year. So you'll get it certainly before your 64 and a half because the sign up begins just within a couple of months of that. Before your 65th birthday, you will be able to sign up for Medicare.
Well, that's good to hear. The first step is keeping an eye out for the postman, the snail mail, and paying attention to what comes through the slot that might be very relevant for your longer term financial security and well-being. Well, when we come back, we'll be joined by two very special guests here in the studios of WYPR, Nicole Duritz, Vice President of Health Security Decisions with AARP. And of course, if you don't know, that means the American Association of Retired Persons. And Mary Beth Franklin, a personal finance expert and award-winning journalist and contributing editor of investmentnews.com. When we come back, they'll be here with us and we'll continue. Let's turn now to our guest segment, and we're delighted to have here in the studios of WYPR, Nicole Duritz, who is a vice president of AARP's Health Security Decisions, Education, and Outreach. Thanks so much, Nicole, for being here. And I know that you do a lot with regard to driving education on a whole range of issues, including health security, Medicare, the Affordable Care Act, and, of course, independent living. So welcome.
Thank you so much. I'm happy to be here.
So give us a big picture perspective or context for how Medicare, which has been around now some 40 years, really pairs with this new transformational health care law, the Affordable Care Act. What are the major implications for Medicare?
Sure. Actually, next year in July, Medicare celebrates its 50th birthday.
So, 50? Oh, okay.
Yeah, so
I'm off 10 years.
Exactly. We're going to be giving them an AARP card. So what does it mean? People ask a lot about what did the Affordable Care Act, most commonly called Obamacare, what does it mean for Medicare? And there's a lot of misinformation that's been swirling. there are a few really critical things for people to know. One, Medicare is here to stay, and that's a real positive. Your guaranteed Medicare benefits are protected in the Affordable Care Act under Obamacare. What people don't always realize is there's some new benefits that are now available to folks. Mm-hmm. For one, you can now go, Medicare beneficiary can now go and have an annual wellness visit with their doctor. They can actually sit down and their doctor can take the time to make a health plan to keep them healthy. And I think that's just spectacular. It's something that everybody should do.
Absolutely.
And you can go in every single year and have that visit. And in that visit, you do not have to pay any out-of-pocket costs. So it's no additional cost to you. It's free. Also, there are some new preventive benefits that are available, again, at no additional out-of-pocket cost. Your flu vaccinations, your shingle shot, screenings for mammography or colonoscopies. So things that you need to do to make sure that you're healthy, or if you do have something going on, that you can catch it early when it's more treatable and you can really maintain that quality of life. And finally, what I think is one of the biggest issues is that the Medicare prescription drug donut hole or coverage gap, which is a part of the drug program, is slowly going away. So in the past, for people who had high drug costs, once they'd spent a certain amount of money, they fell into this dreaded coverage gap. And they would then be responsible not only for their monthly premiums, but also for 100% of the cost of that medication.
Wow.
And a lot of people would stop taking their pills, or they'd skip days, or they'd try to cut medicines in half, which are not good things. But now it's discounted. And you can save over 50% on brand name drugs and about 35% on generic medications. Mm-hmm. And by the year 2020, that coverage gap will go away and your cost will be steady for the majority of the program. 25% of the cost of your medications will be your responsibility until you spend around $5,000. Yeah. That's a huge improvement.
Yeah. Well, huge benefits all around.
Nicole, clearly Medicare is a massive program. There are 50 million Americans in Medicare. We're trying to focus today on how you get ready for retirement, how you get ready for your retirement years. How does someone who is 64 years old say, what do they need to do to sign up for Medicare?
Well, you know, I think you hit the nail on the head when you said, how does someone who is 64 prepare? And the key point here is you need to start thinking about it early. When you are signing up for Medicare, you have a 7-month period where you're eligible to sign up. 3 months before your 65th birthday, the month of your 65th birthday, and then 3 months following. So there's a lot to do in that period, and you want to actually work. I recommend to everybody, you want to sign up in that first 3-month period, 3 months before you turn 65. So how do you prepare for that decision? Well, you need to kind of step back and do an assessment on your own life. Lots of us are going to be working well into our 60s and early 70s, or maybe even beyond. So you have to ask yourself a series of questions. I'm working right now. Do I have coverage through my employer? How does my coverage through my employer interact with Medicare? That's a critical question. How do I like to receive my health services? Some of us are really, really comfortable using an HMO style. You know, you have a lead doctor who refers you on to everyone. You have to see doctors or visit hospitals within a network. Some people like to receive their care that way. And there's a way to do that in Medicare. A lot of us also prefer, I want to go to any doctor I want to. I want to go to any hospital or pharmacy. There's a different way. So you have to make a decision between traditional original Medicare and what's called Medicare Advantage. You're getting the same bucket of services, but you're receiving them and interacting differently. You've got to decide about what add-ons you might want. If you decide to get what's called traditional or original Medicare, many people decide they want a Medicare supplemental or Medigap plan to kind of fill in some of the holes. Medicare is a very, very comprehensive program, but like all insurance, it does not cover everything.
Well, let's say you're gainfully employed at 65 and 66, and then for whatever circumstances change, and you're 67 yet now, and you say, I need to sign up for Medicare. What are the implications then?
You might be too late. And not too late meaning that you couldn't sign up, but too late meaning you may have some added expenses if you have not taken the action and the steps that you need to take at 65 when you first become eligible. So that's why I say to everybody, if you're gainfully employed, either on your own or more likely for a larger company, you need to understand how your current health benefits interact with Medicare. Because that's where you're going to guarantee to have choices later on.
So you can sign up and even defer claiming.
It's not exactly a deferral.
No, okay.
what happens is if you have coverage and your employer says, yes, you can keep our coverage, what sometimes happens is that Medicare might act as what's called the primary payer. So when the bill comes in, Medicare is the first thing to pay. And then if you have employer coverage, it may serve kind of as a wraparound. Right. So if there's any costs that are not covered by the Medicare program, and as I mentioned, there are things that are not covered by the Medicare right. program, then your employer coverage might fill those gaps. So again, that's why you have to have a conversation with your human resources, your benefits folks, to better understand how those things work together.
The employer-based coverage does not remain exactly the same in most instances. It accounts for Medicare, so it changes, and you need to know how those two work together. That is, I think, the most important part of turning 65. People assume, I've got insurance at work, it's going to stay the same. No, it doesn't.
Right.
In,
right.
in the great majority of cases, it does not. And to your point, Nicole, about what happens if you sign up after 65, my father is one of those people. He did not sign up during that window. And for the rest of his life, he has to pay a surcharge every month
yep.
on top of his other medical expenses just to make up for the fact he didn't sign up at 65.
I don't hear any downside to signing up at 65.
I personally do not see any downside. When my parents were going through the process, when I will go through the process, I will be signing up in the 3 months prior to. And I think that's actually a critical issue to discuss. This is not a passive activity for the lion's share of the American population. When you want to sign up for Medicare, you have to actively do something. You have to actively make decisions. And here's where it gets a little bit complicated, and we have a lot of information and support that can help you through this process. You don't call Medicare to sign up. You actually sign up through the Social Security Administration. And that gets people a little bit confused.
Right.
But unless you are one of those people who is already receiving Social Security benefits before they turn 65, you have to do something. And again, that is the vast majority of the American public.
You raise a point with you and your parents. I just, you know, mentioned my father. This is a family discussion in most cases.
Yep.
A parent will come to their adult child and say, help me with this, because it's so confusing. It's such a big decision. And so it becomes a family conversation with adult children and their older parents.
Well, and I know you're talking about retirement discussions and decisions, and much of this is a family decision or a family discussion. It may talk about where you're going to live. It may deal with your finances. It may deal with your health. You know, we at ARP believe these things are so intertwined, where you're going to live, how you're saving or planning for your retirement, and also maintaining that healthy lifestyle.
I think one of the things you touched on that is so critical to get hold of is the fact that it doesn't just happen. You got to do something.
Absolutely.
Now, and that in itself can be a big obstacle, because there's a lot of confusion. And imagine, you know, picking up the phone, calling your Social Security Administration.
Right.
It sounds like a nightmare to deal with, but maybe it's not. Give us the three-step Medicare for Idiots, me, namely, you know, tutorial.
We actually have a book called Medicare for Dummies, which can help you on this.
Okay.
So what do you need to do? Well, prior even to the 3 months where your initial open enrollment, your initial enrollment period begins, you can start doing your homework. You can find out if there, and there is in most communities, where there's a local Social Security office. Because you don't have to do this online. You don't have to do it by phone or by paper. You can actually go physically someplace and start filling out forms. Lots of people like doing things electronically. That's an option too. And then there's also phone. You can pick up the phone and call and move through the process. So what you need to do is just that. You need to pick up the phone or go in or go online and get your form. You have some critical decisions that you're going to have to make. You're going to have to decide whether or not you want traditional or original Medicare, which is more of the fee-for-service style, where you get to go to any doctor or go to any hospital that accepts Medicare and you get a free pick. Or you need to go and decide, I want to do Medicare Advantage, which is, again, as I described a little bit earlier, more of that HMO style. And there are pluses and minuses mm-hmm. to both of those choices. You need to decide if you want to buy a Medicare supplemental plan, which will fill in some of the gaps that are left out that aren't a part of the Medicare program. You need to pick a Medicare prescription drug plan. We sometimes refer to Medicare as alphabet soup, because right. people often hear about Medicare Part A, Medicare Part B, Part C, Part D.
We're going to spare our listeners today on that.
Absolutely. Well, and we don't have to go through this, but what people should know is that Medicare covers your hospital needs. It covers your medical service needs, which are like going to rehabilitation or a physical therapist or going to your doctor. It covers prescription drugs. And it covers the full picture of what you need to stay healthy. But you do have options and choices.
You mentioned basic Medicare, Medicare Advantage a couple of times. Mm-hmm. Can you go into some detail? Because about a quarter of Medicare beneficiaries choose Medicare Advantage plans.
Absolutely. So Medicare Advantage, as I described, is when you are working in more of an HMO style, health maintenance organization style of coverage. Again, you're going to likely have a network of doctors and medical professionals that you can visit. Medicare Advantage is kind of a bundled package where you have your hospital and your medical services and most generally your prescription drug all in one package. And because you have some limitations on the doctors and hospitals you can visit, there is some cost savings there. And so because of those cost savings, you may realize those savings on your end, meaning your fees might be a little bit lower. And sometimes there's add-ons. Sometimes Medicare Advantage plans have gym memberships, or they may add vision and dental services, which are not available in traditional Medicare, but not every plan has that. One consideration for people is that in some parts of the United States, there are very robust opportunities for Medicare Advantage, meaning you have a lot of choices and the physician and the healthcare network is very broad. Other parts of the country, it's not quite as robust. So again, we keep going back to our families. This time I'm going to pick my in-laws because they live in Minnesota and it's very cold there. Many people decide when they get to their retirement that they want to live someplace a little sunnier and not quite so harsh a climate. Not my in-laws, but many, many others. And so if you are going to be making a selection, Minnesota happens to have a very robust Medicare Advantage opportunity. And then you're going to move to another part of the country, and I won't name names, where it's not quite so robust. And you get then to this new place where you're going to live and your choices are not so good. That can impact your health care moving forward. So in that situation, you need to think about where are you going to be living later on. Because here's another little hitch in the story. There are, you only have a small window of opportunity when you can buy a Medigap plan. And so you need to think about that in your broader choice.
Now, what if you're talking about change and people moving, et cetera? What if you want to make a change? What if you're not happy with the choice you've got?
So that is a wonderful thing that every year during the Medicare open enrollment period, which just ended, so it starts on October 15th every year and it ends on December 7th every year, you have the opportunity to make some shifts. You can pick a new Medicare Advantage plan, move from one to another if you want to. You have the opportunity to pick a new prescription drug plan every open enrollment. And you can choose to move between original Medicare and Medicare Advantage during this period. But I always tell people to really consider that choice.
Well, loads of information and a lot of choices to make. And again, you got to do something if you're approaching 65. Where's the easiest place for folks to go to get what they need, to get info they need, to make the choices they need to make?
Sure. For folks who are comfortable using the internet, I recommend that you go to Medicare.gov. It has a ton of information. Not everybody likes to use the internet. And so you can always call 1-800-MEDICARE and speak to a customer service representative and they'll send you a lot. And then finally, AARP has a lot of information and support opportunities. So if you visit www.aarp.org/MedicareQA, we have a question and answer tool where you can type in your question and we will give you answers.
And of course, you can always go to the Transamerica Institute, transamericainstitute.org, and click on the health section and great resources there. Well, Nicole Duritz, thank you so much for being with us from AARP. It's a pleasure to have you and thanks for helping us sort out these very complicated sometimes, but very necessary choices and options that everyone has. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Well, we've spent some time here today talking about when to file for Medicare and the critical issues all around that. And the other side to the coin here, and successful retirement planning and living in retirement securely, are all the issues around Social Security. And here, timing is everything. So, with us next here in the studio of WYPR to help us sort out some of those issues is Mary Beth Franklin, an award-winning journalist who writes a regular column for Financial Advisors titled Focus on Retirement. She's also the author of Maximizing Your Social Security Retirement Benefits, which is available at www.investmentnews.com. Welcome, Mary Beth. It's terrific to have you here. I know you write so much on all these critical issues: income security, tax-efficient withdrawals, Social Security claiming strategies. It's all about a strategy, isn't it?
It's all about a strategy, and most importantly, it's all about timing. In fact, when and how you claim Social Security benefits for a married couple, particularly, could mean the difference of $100,000 or more over their joint lifetime. That's real money.
And we're talking between 62 and 70.
Correct.
8-year time, $100,000.
Absolutely.
Incredible.
Are most Americans even aware of this?
No. The majority of Americans continue to claim Social Security benefits as early as they can at age 62 just because they can. But they may not realize that the lifetime value of their Social Security benefits is probably the largest asset they have. It's larger than their 401k balance. It's larger than the equity in their home. So they need to get smart about these rules.
So let's start at the beginning. That seems like a very good place to start. What are the first things that people need to be thinking about as they're considering their Social Security benefits?
Well, as Greg mentioned, timing is everything. You can claim Social Security retirement benefits as early as age 62. But if your full retirement age is 66, which it currently is for anyone born from 1943 through 1954, the difference between taking it 4 years early at 62 and waiting till your full retirement age is 66 is a 25% haircut, and that's permanent. You will get smaller Social Security benefits for the rest of your life. Now, the flip side of that is if you can wait up until age 70, you get a bonus of 8% per year for every year you delay collecting benefits beyond your full retirement age up until age 70. That means wait until age 70 and your benefits are worth 32% more.
Wow.
And in an era where there are very few pensions anymore, very few guarantees, and where your bank account's probably paying less than 1%, getting a guaranteed 8% per year is a pretty big deal.
But that means, of course, you got to wait to 70. But increasingly, as people are living longer than any time in history, that's a very plausible scenario.
Absolutely. The average American man is probably going to live into his early 80s. Average American woman, longer than that. But those are averages. It means 50% of people are going to live longer. So the key is, where do you get a source of income that you can't outlive? For most people, Social Security is the only form of guaranteed cost of living adjusted income that they can't outlive.
So let's talk about a few scenarios. Hypothetically, a single person, they are turning 62. They're actually working and plan to continue working for quite some time. What should they be thinking about in terms of their strategy?
Well, for most people who continue to work, I generally recommend that they do not claim Social Security benefits early at 62 because most people don't realize there's something called an earnings cap. For 2014, if you earn too much, and that's defined as $15,480 a year, if you collect Social Security benefits before your full retirement age and continue to work and exceed this very meager earnings cap, then you will start giving benefits back. You lose a dollar in benefits for every $2 over this limit. So essentially, if you make more than about $46,000 a year, you've given all your benefits back. Now, they're not gone forever. They're deferred. When you get to your full retirement age, Social Security is going to recalculate your benefit. However, in the meantime, you've given up the very valuable option of using what I call creative claiming strategies. And to use those, you must wait to what I call the magic age of 66 to first claim benefits.
And why is 66 the magic age to claim benefits?
It's the magic age for three reasons. One, you'd get 100% of those promised benefits. There's no haircut. Two, the earnings cap that I just explained no longer applies once you reach your full retirement age. And three, and most importantly, you can engage in creative claiming strategies.
Now, it seems to me that obviously the last few years have been tough on a lot of people. And many have not regained gainful employment, and they've seen whatever savings they've had for retirement dwindle over the course of time. So when they hit 62, and the options aren't many perhaps for some, it seems unfair that they're penalized effectively.
Well, Greg, that's an excellent point. But keep in mind, I don't like to call Social Security an entitlement because this is an earned benefit. You have paid FICA taxes throughout your career. You've paid a lot of taxes. So you've earned this benefit. But in a sense, it is still a safety net. If you hit 61 and you've lost your job and you can't find another job, well, you might want to claim those reduced benefits at 62. But say the economy's picked up and now you're 65 and you have income coming in, wow, I wish I didn't take those reduced benefits for the rest of my life. There's actually something you can do. There are two do-over strategies. The first one is if within 12 months of first claiming Social Security benefits, you change your mind, you can actually withdraw your application for benefits. You file Form 521 and say to Social Security, hey, changed my mind. Now, the catch is you have to pay those benefits back.
So this is, you've already started drawing and you now say, wait a minute, I've changed my mind. I'll give back what I've drawn.
Right. But it must be within 12 months of first claiming.
I see.
And you only get a once in a lifetime chance. You pay back those benefits, but now you've wiped the slate clean. At a later date and an older age, you can claim Social Security benefit as if it was the first time, so you're going to get a bigger amount. But in this example we talked earlier, someone lost their job, took reduced benefits early. Now it's several years later, and now they're making money. Is there anything they can do? There is a second strategy. If you miss that first 12-month window, you can't actually do over and pay things back. But you can voluntarily suspend your benefits once you reach your full retirement age, currently 66. That will allow your benefits to earn these delayed retirement credits of 8% a year for every year you postpone up until age 70. So say you claimed reduced benefits at 62, 66, you change your mind, suspend the benefits, and by age 70, you have just built up your benefits by 32%. It's effectively restored your full retirement age benefit, which, one, is important for lifetime retirement income, but most importantly for married couples, because when the higher earner, the bigger beneficiary, dies, the surviving spouse is going to inherit that benefit, and you want that survivor benefit to be as big as possible.
So that leads into a great question. We talked about claiming strategies for single people. Let's talk a little now about married couples.
There's essentially two magic strategies. And remember, you must be at least 66 to use them. The first one is called file and suspend. At 66, you say to the Social Security Administration, I want to file for my benefits, but hold on. Don't pay them to me. I want to suspend my benefits so they can earn 8% a year up until age 70. Now, why would you want to do it? It's because it now triggers a spousal benefit. Now, if you've never worked a day in your life, but you're married to someone who's entitled to Social Security benefits, you can get a spousal benefit just because you're married. And that's worth up to half of what the worker got. So let's just say in this situation, we have an old Ozzie and Harriet or Marge and Homer Simpson, where you've got one spouse that's working and one that stays home. In this situation, the working spouse at 66 may want to say, I want to file and suspend, don't pay me anything, but it will trigger a benefit from my stay-at-home spouse. Now, let's say different scenario, you've got both spouses are working, and maybe the wife is a school teacher and she's decided at 66, she is just sick of these kids. She's going to retire early and take her benefit. Well, her higher earning husband, if he waits till 66, could use a different strategy. He could say, now that I'm full retirement age, I want to restrict my claim to spousal benefits only. That says to Social Security, don't pay me my benefit. Let that keep growing 8% a year. But in the meantime, pay me half of my wife's benefit for the next 4 years.
We've talked about married people. Now let's turn to people who are divorced. How do claiming strategies differ in a divorced situation?
This is my favorite thing to talk about because so many people don't realize that if they had been married at least 10 years and are now divorced and currently single, they can claim Social Security benefits just as if they were still married.
Ouch. Surprise.
Surprise. And you can imagine where some divorces are messier than others. And maybe one party might say, I am never going to retire, so you never get a dime. Well, guess what? Congress figured that might be a problem. So in addition to having been married 10 years, if you're divorced at least 2 years and currently single, you can claim on your ex even if he or she has not yet claimed. The only rule is that both of you have to be at least 62 years old.
Okay. All right, Mary Beth, I've got a tough one for you. Now, what if one of them, one of those divorced couple, one of those divorced has passed on?
Bingo. While a spousal benefit can be worth up to 50% of the worker's benefit, a survivor benefit is worth up to 100% of what the deceased worker was either collecting or entitled to collect. That means your ex is worth twice as much dead than alive.
Okay, Mary Beth, one more now, another toughie. What if that the deceased, whether it be the man or the woman, but the top earner, married after the divorce, so the ex is single, therefore entitled to claim, but does that ex now have to compete with the widow or widower of the earner?
Believe it or not, no. Let me give you an example. John marries Mary. They're married for 10 years. They get divorced. Mary remains single. John marries his secretary, Susie. They're married for 10 years. They get divorced. Susie's single. John goes to a club and meets Tiffany. Tiffany's 30. They get married and they now have a 2-year-old. And John drops dead. Who gets benefits? They all get benefits. The first ex-wife who was married 10 years and is single. The second ex-wife who was married 10 years and is single. The 2-year-old as the minor dependent child of the deceased worker. And his 32-year-old mother because she's taking care of him. You worry about the long-term finances, about Social Security. It's less about trust funds and a whole lot more about divorce.
Good thing John's not around to see all this. Well, Mary Beth, you've given us, that's quite a scenario you've mapped out for us. So assuming that John, after passing on all those former wives and his child, are claiming more than he probably put into it, how is the system sustainable? We hear all the doom and gloom about the future of Social Security. Is it sustainable?
Social Security certainly has some long-term financial problems. But keep in mind that the FICA taxes that we all pay every week in our paycheck is what pays for Social Security benefits. In other words, that tax money is earmarked to pay benefits. Right now, the estimate is the trust fund, the surplus money, is going to run out around 2033. Congress has to do something before then to bring in more revenues, reduce benefits, or both. Congress also knows it's the most successful and most popular federal program in history and that old people vote. So they will do something to fix this. People can be confident they will get benefits going forward. For younger people, they may not look exactly like they do today.
You've given us a whole lot to think about with regards to Social Security. As people are entering into this monumental decision, in your opinion, what are the top 5 things they should be thinking about?
First of all, the longer you wait, the bigger your benefit. You can collect at 62, but you'll get a whole lot more if you wait till 70. 2, that assumes you're healthy enough that you're going to be around to collect them. You must be present to win. If you have a major health issue, you probably don't want to delay. 3, married couples should look at their Social Security claiming decision as a household decision and coordinate their strategy for the biggest bang for their buck. 4, if you're divorced and have been married at least 10 years, you may be able to collect just as if you're still married. And finally, if you are entitled to a retirement benefit on your own earnings record and you are a surviving spouse, you are entitled to 2 separate benefits, retirement and survivor. You can't collect them both at once, but you can collect one first and switch to the other later in which order, ever order, would give you a bigger benefit.
Great information. I never knew. Fortunately, I've got a little time yet, but I'll take it all into consideration and hopefully be there to enjoy it. Catherine, anything else?
Where can people go to learn more about Social Security claiming strategies?
Well, believe it or not, the Social Security website is one of the best places to go. It's chock full of terrific information. So you would go to www.ssa.gov. great place to start. And if you just have a question, type it in the search box and it will take you to a publication to explain it. Also, the AARP is a great source of information on both Social Security and Medicare. Lots of information there. If you want to read what I write every week, mainly about Social Security, you can go to investmentnews.com or just Google my name, Mary Beth Franklin. And finally, I do have a book on this, of how to maximize your Social Security retirement benefits. If you go to www.investmentnews.com/MBFinvestor.
Well, Mary Beth Franklin, thanks so much. You've enlightened us and shared a great deal of expertise with us, and we'll have you back.
Thank you so much.
Welcome back to this very special edition of Clear Path, your roadmap to health and wealth, and brought to you by the Transamerica Institute. What fascinating guests, Nicole and Mary Beth. I felt like it was Stump Mary Beth Franklin regarding the whole Social Security, all the questions and considerations around that. Boy, she's a wealth of information, huh?
She sure is. And she illustrated just how many decisions that an individual has to make given their situation.
We're going to get to Q&As, questions and answers, questions at least from our listeners. Fortunately, the mailbox was full, so we've got a lot to cover, and we won't get to all of them, but we'll get to some of the key questions. But I think that's the important thing, is knowing when to do what you need to do is so critical. And of course, Hector, the same applies for the Medicare side.
Absolutely. As we've said a couple of times today, Medicare is very much tied to your 65th birthday. The 3 months before, the month of your birthday, and then the 3 months after. That 7-month window is the time to sign up for Medicare. If you miss that window, then, as we said earlier, you will have to pay a penalty for the rest of your life. Every month, you'll have to pay a surcharge for the rest of your life for Medicare. It's something that is easily avoidable by just signing up.
And with so many people planning to work past 65 and working past 65 and getting health care benefits through their employer, it may not even occur to them that that age 65, that window is their mandatory window.
Especially when the workplace health benefit normally accounts for Medicare. The vast majority of workplace health plans assume you're on Medicare, and their health plan changes. It becomes what is known as secondary. And so if you don't have Medicare as primary, then that obviously impacts your health coverage after you're 65.
Right. Well, let's get to some questions from our listeners. And the first one is from Louise in Bolton Hill. Great neighborhood, I might add. I lived there for many years. Louise writes, I'm in my late 60s and haven't yet started getting Social Security. I love my job and want to continue working. Is there a point at which I have to start taking Social Security? And will I be penalized for working when I do start claiming? I think that's one for you, Catherine.
It sure is. Age 70 is the maximum age that you can start claiming your Social Security benefits. And if you continue working past age 70 while you're earning income, if your annual income exceeds a certain amount, you may pay income taxes on that. But in that regard, if you're healthy, you're still working, and you're collecting Social Security benefits, that's kind of a good problem to have.
Good. Well, hopefully that answers Louise. I've got one here from Paul in Glen Burnie. I have Medicare. Can I use my online state insurance marketplace to compare and buy a Medicare Advantage supplement or prescription plan? I think I understand that question. Hector, can you help Paul?
Yes, this is a question obviously related to the Affordable Care Act and the interaction between Medicare and the Affordable Care Act. And the answer is there is no connection. You cannot go to the marketplace to get any information related to Medicare. It's two completely different systems for the most part. As Nicole pointed out, Medicare is not impacted by the ACA. So you just keep doing Medicare through Medicare.gov and through the normal channels that you would for Medicare. The marketplace does not offer Medicare Advantage, Medigap supplemental policies, or Part D prescription plans.
Okay. Good. Edward here in Baltimore City asks about a catastrophic plan. He's been offered one by his broker but doesn't understand the catastrophic plan. He says, what do I need to do? Is this something for me? And who do I buy them from?
Well, for someone who's a Medicare age, they are no longer eligible for catastrophic plans. Catastrophic plans are only for young people under 30 years old. They used to be available. They used to be pretty common in the marketplace. But under the Affordable Care Act, those have been outlawed for anyone over 30 years old.
Ah, I hope you're under 30 if you're interested. Gretchen of Roland Park asks, I know that there are different ages at which someone can start receiving Social Security. Actually, something Mary Beth covered in depth here. Gretchen asks, do I also have to think about age with regard to 401k withdrawals?
Yes, you do, and it requires a strategy. You can begin taking withdrawals from a 401k plan at age 59 and a half. And as I mentioned at the opening of the show, there's an age at which there are what are called mandatory required distributions at age 70 and a half. Now, as you plan the timing of when you're going to stop working or switch maybe from full-time to part-time, looking at the timing of when you're going to collect your Social Security benefits, you want to set forth a very carefully orchestrated transition plan to help optimize the taxation of those benefits. In other words, to find the most tax-efficient way to make those withdrawals and start collecting benefits, and doing so in a way that from an investment perspective, that you can help ensure that your retirement savings will last your lifetime.
Okay. All right. Well, I hope, Gretchen, that answers your question. Manuel in Towson says, I'm 65, a legal immigrant with a green card, and have lived in this country for 3 years. Can I get Medicare coverage? I think that's one for you, Hector. What do you offer, Manuel?
Well, unfortunately, Medicare requires that you've lived in the United States continuously for 5 years. So he would not qualify. However, he could qualify for health insurance plan on the marketplace that does not have a residency waiting period. So no on Medicare, but yes on a marketplace plan.
So in terms of Manuel, so once he had 2 more years, then he qualifies for Medicare? Is that the idea?
Yes. If he's paid into the system and has a job, et cetera, he could qualify at that point. But you have to have lived in the United States for 5 years in order to be initially eligible.
Got it. As our listeners indicate, that there are a great deal of questions out there. And again, they're always very specific to the individual and to his or her circumstances. And knowing where to go for good information that you can then adapt and sort out based on your circumstances is key. Hector, Catherine, where should folks go? What's the best direction you can provide?
Well, on the retirement side with Social Security, the best starting place is SSA or Social Security Administration.gov. They have a wealth of information, and by doing so, you're going straight to the source. Also, AARP has some terrific resources. Mary Beth Franklin's book, Maximizing Your Social Security Retirement Benefits, which you can get at investmentnews.com. And last but not least, it's a very intricate business that requires a strategy. Be sure to consult your financial advisor if you have one, and make sure that they're in a position to answer your questions.
On both of these subjects, retirement and healthcare, there's the transamericainstitute.org, O-R-G, where you can get information on Catherine's side, on the retirement stuff, Social Security, et cetera, and on the healthcare side and Medicare. Medicare.gov, G-O-V, is a great resource, obviously, on Medicare. That's, again, the horse's mouth on everything related to Medicare. And then finally, as Nicole mentioned, AARP.org for the information related to retirement and healthcare.
Great. Well, Catherine Collinson, Hector De La Torre, it's been great being with you here and all together and delving into these issues in much greater detail. Of course, we'll be continuing our discussions each Monday at around 4:45 during All Things Considered. But in the meantime, thanks for joining us for this very special edition. And we hope that we've provided some insight and some guidance and hopefully further interest, because it does matter what you do and when you do it. That's all we have time for here on Clear Path, your roadmap to health and wealth, brought to you by the Transamerica Institute. I'm Greg Tucker. Thanks, as always, to our terrific producer, Tom Welch. See you next time on WYPR, your NPR news station.